Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Market and Cafe. Gateway is Central Iowa's premier good food store and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Market and Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry, residential commercial land. Joe's been covering all of that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, Ed Fallon with you here, folks. Thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for a bumper music and welcoming Charles Goldman to the program. Hey, Charles, how you been?
Good. It's been a while.
Just good? Yep. Not great?
No.
No, not great.
No.
Okay. We have a lot of ground to cover today. We're going to get right into it. I'm going to welcome to the program Yasser Abu-Daga. He's from Gaza. From Gaza originally, still has a lot of family there. Some have escaped. Some have, unfortunately, sadly been killed. His father was able to get out, and yet his sister and family are still in Gaza. And one of the journalists killed was his wife's cousin. And before I ask you what's life like in Gaza, a bit of news breaking here recently is the lead singer of the band Kneecap was found not guilty of the charge of terrorism. Which is almost like, why was that even brought up? I mean, he was charged with terrorism for bringing a Palestinian flag out and making some, they weren't anti-Israeli comments, they were pro-Palestinian comments at a concert. So I assume you know about that, Yasser?
Yeah, I did, and that's really encouraging that the world opinion and it's starting to shift. It's, I guess, it's historically have been that way, that the oppressor accused the victims of being terrorists and right. Kind of justify the violence against them. So yep. That's great news. And yeah. And yeah, appreciate, I guess there's a lot of pressure from the people on the ground in the UK to kind of correct what has been historically wrong about the views of the Palestinians.
Right. So what is, I assume you're in touch as well as you can be with family and others you know in Gaza. What is life like there now? What are you hearing?
Oh yeah, it's very 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 terrible situation. I guess in especially the last couple of months in top of the bombing and the killing with the bombs and bullets. Now the famine is widespread and a lot of Palestinians, especially children and elderly, have been dying because of lack of nutritional food and also lack of medicine. There's an estimate that at least 10,000 Palestinians in Gaza have been has died because of the indirect because of the
starvation.
Famine.
Yeah. So is there any hope that with more and more countries now recognizing the legitimacy of a Palestinian state, that might lead to opportunities to bring food relief and maybe even to, you know, to convince Benjamin Netanyahu to back off this apparent plan to destroy all of Gaza?
Yeah, I'm hoping, but I don't see any action behind the recognition. It seems like it's business as usual. You hear the UK saying that they're recognizing the state of Palestine, but at the same time, they continue with the military cooperation, the commercial cooperation with Israel, welcoming the president of Israel, which he has openly called for ethnic cleansing the Palestinians from Gaza. So it just seemed like these talks need to be backed by action, and I don't see that action, and I don't see that there will be any movement from the Israeli side unless they see an actual action, boycott, maybe banning them from importing weapons that they're using in Gaza. That might change the situation, but just the recognition of the Palestinian state is not going to change any facts on the ground.
Yeah, in fact, the Congress just approved, like, I think, $8 billion worth of more
the US
military
Congress.
Aid. Yeah, that one of the few things they've gotten done besides the Not Big Beautiful Bill.
Yeah, and how was that a fairly lopsided vote, or was there any significant opposition?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the question is, what is Netanyahu's end game in that? What is it? What is this strategy?
It seems like to me his end game, and tell me what you think, Yasser. My impression is his end game is to have complete control over Gaza, the West Bank, the Golan Heights, and maybe even more land beyond that. The dream of Zion, a greater Israel. It seems like that is the goal that they're now pursuing. Am I overstating it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's, I guess, the founder of Israel, Ben Gurion, had said that we need at least 80% Jewish population between the river and the sea to make sure that we continue to be a Jewish state. And currently now we're coming up to about equal number of Palestinians and Jewish in that area. And the only way, I guess, to continue the Jewish-only state is to ethnically cleansing the Palestinians from their land, the way the same way that Ben Gurion did when they occupied 76% of the historic Palestine and created the State of Israel. They pushed more than 700,000 Palestinians out of their homes and killed about 15,000. So that's history is repeating itself now. That's what the Israelis are trying to do. And they're doing it quietly in the West Bank, but loudly in Gaza. So far, as you know, close to 70,000 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, and that's official record. I know that the number is much higher because I know people that they only count the people that they came and their relative come in and report the death, but there's a lot that they are still under the rubble, and there's some people they just kind of bury their dead and they don't even have access to go and report the dead. So
do you in terms of the starvation going on in Gaza right now, do you have any thoughts on the flotilla of over 50 vessels that are carrying 500 volunteers and a lot of food and medical aid? Do you have any thoughts on the possibility that might successfully be able to deliver those medical and food aid to Gaza?
If they make it, that will be a much needed relief. It's not going to be enough, but at least there will be some essentials that they're coming in. But Israel vowed that they will not allow to arrive the same way that they did with multiple other flotillas that they tried to break the siege. The siege on Gaza did not start on October 7th. It was put in place since 2006, and there are multiple flotillas that they tried to break the siege on Gaza before October 7th, and those were all get attacked violently, and we know that people died on some of those flotillas with the violent attack. So the encouraging news that hopefully Spain and Italy had sent some military ships to escort them, so hopefully at least they can protect the people from being attacked directly. Yeah. But I have really low hope that it will make as long as the United States and the UK are in support of the, right. the blockade and in support of the Israeli action in Gaza Strip.
One more big picture question for you and Charles before we got to run to a break. What at some point this conflict is going to be resolved, and what do you think? 50 years from now, 100 years from now, what is the lay of the land in this region of the world? What does it look like?
I think that's the way it should be is, you know, this land has been a melting pot for so many thousands of years, and the land should belong to the people that they live in it. So my vision of how things will need to be is that's going to be a one state that have equal rights for all the people that they live in the land, with the constitution protecting the rights for the minority, and all people will be treated the same, one vote, one man, the same way that we have seen right. that developed in South Africa. And there's a lot of other nations that they are binationals, but they're still living in peace and democracy. And that's how I see it.
Okay.
Is that
that'd be nice. And you know,
unfortunately, the two-state solution is not a solution,
right?
Because it'll be a maintenance of what we have already seen up right. to this point. A one-state solution is probably the only option. But the question is, this is not a region of the world in which democracy has ever flourished, including Israel.
Yeah.
And so where is that heritage going to come from to spread throughout this region?
But Europe was not a region of the world where democracy flourished.
And when? Well,
eventually it happened. And like Yasser pointed out, it happened in South Africa. I mean, there's still issues, of course, issues everywhere, but...
So which country in the Middle East or the distant Middle East personifies a democratic government? Turkey is authoritarianism.
Right.
Right. Syria is obviously...
In transition. Who knows?
Yeah. Lebanon has a weak democracy at best.
Jordan has a king.
Right. You know, the peninsula states and Saudi are run by... You know, oil monarchs.
I guess I'm hopeful that eventually, especially given all the pain of what's being done, what's happening right now. I mean, that pain is spreading well beyond what's happening to the Palestinian people.
Well, it's also beginning to poison the Israeli public.
Sure,
You know, you can see it in the performance of the IDF that they are also now. Have lost moral legitimacy in terms of their behaviors in this conflict.
Yeah, sir, I got 30 seconds left to give you the final word.
Yeah, I guess the people of Gaza in very need of our help, whether by political action, pressuring our elected officials, and also the direct aid. And here in Eastern Iowa, or in Iowa in general, we had the nonprofit organization that collect donation to provide help to people in Gaza. The name of the organization is Humanitarian Operation on Public Education. The website is hopefoundbal.org. Please donate anything. Will help. 100% of the donation will go directly to help people in Gaza.
All right. Yasser, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us.
Thank you.
Folks, we've been talking with Yasser Abu-Daga, and we'll be back in a minute. Charles Goldman, Ed Fallon here with you, back in a minute with a little conversation about a couple Trump speeches this week that needs some analysis, his autism press conference, and his... compelling arguments before the UN that a lot of other countries are just going to hell. I'm kidding about being compelling. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we'll come back in a minute with more conversation on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515- 208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament, the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrum Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrum and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry. All right, Ed Fallon and Charles Goldman with you here, folks. Couple big speeches by Trump this past week. Dr. Goldman, in your capacity as a physician, I'm sure you were very grateful to be enlightened on how bad it is for pregnant women to take Tylenol if they want to avoid the risk of having a baby born with autism.
Okay, so there was a lot more going on at that press conference than just that. Now, the first question is, why do we have the press conference?
It was
because RFK Jr. had promised by September they would have figured out what caused autism. So next question I have is, why was President Trump making any comments about this? Does he have any expertise? This was like COVID.
He doesn't need to have expertise.
I understand that. Because he was going to, essentially he was doing this because he was going to take credit for this finding of what causes autism. Yeah. Third thing is, not a single person knows anything about autism, either from an advocacy group, a pediatrician, OBGYN, was asked to speak.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of people who have no expertise. So let's get to what was said.
Right.
Okay. So the first thing is that this statement relied heavily on one article whose lead author is a professor at Harvard in their public health school. Someone who in 2020s, early 2020s, said absolutely there is no correlation between use of Tylenol during pregnancy.
Was there some speculation back then that it
was? Yes, there's always been a question about whether this was some sort of a perinatal, in utero exposure to something that was used reasonably commonly. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not the 50s where it was, women would smoke and drink during their pregnancy. Most of those kids turned out to be okay, but there's always been a question about certain, medications that are used during pregnancy that might have some effect. So the person who was one of the lead authors on this paper, and I'll get into a little bit of the details, was actually the person who said there wasn't any relationship. Then in 2022, all of a sudden he shows up as
same guy, as
a plaintiff's expert in a case in which pregnant women sued the maker of Tylenol for claiming that it caused autism in their children. And he made about $150,000 at $700 an hour making
an
that
hour.
Case. Now, of course, the court threw the case, it was thrown out. I mean, basically said there's nothing here. I mean, they lost.
But he still made 150 grand.
Well, if you're an expert, you make the money whether you win or lose. That's the whole point. They don't want your payment to be predicated on whether you win or lose.
But he had to switch his view from what he said years ago to the opposite opinion.
But anyway, so he's the lead author on this.
Wow.
Which it really doesn't even matter. Because if you read this paper, it's not done in the way you would normally do to aggregate non-homogeneous studies, studies that don't use the same criteria to do the research. They don't use the same methodology. It was kind of taking this whole melange of studies and throwing them together in a way that wasn't really scientifically valid. And what they came up with was what they call a hazard ratio of 1.15. So the implication of that is that the use of Tylenol, and it seemed to be a dose-related effect. So the more you would use, if you could even figure out in self-reported studies how much they were using, the more you used, the higher the rates of autism seemed to be, although it culminated in this cumulative number 1.15. So to put it in terms that maybe have some meaning, you use a statistical term, number needed to harm. So in other words, to have one event where autism was caused by the use of Tylenol at that level of odds ratio or hazard ratio, the number works out to about 1 in 700 pregnancies would result in an autistic child if you use Tylenol. Okay, so this is not in any way. Remember, this is, they're talking about the epidemic of autism. First of all, everyone agrees in the field. The epidemic of autism is an ascertainment bias because people are getting screened.
Okay, I was going to say,
parents want their children screened.
By ascertainment bias, you mean there were...
If you look for it, you're going to find it.
Yeah,
also,
and
the
we weren't looking for it before.
Correct. And the definition of spectrum, autistic spectrum disorder, has become much more inclusive of a range of behaviors. Whereas before, it was like the densely... Right, yeah, it was the densely autistic, non-communicative child. The other thing is the sibling studies, which are probably the best. In other words, you have siblings of the same parents. Mm-hmm. One child may have taken, you know, the mom took Tylenol, and the other didn't. There, the rates of autism were exactly the same in siblings, whether they did, the mom did or did not use autism. This, of course, is also part of, if I remember correctly, it was a bunch of guys, right? Everybody up on the stage was a bunch of guys. And so
well, there you go, male bashing again.
Well, male bashing, because what are they really doing here? They're telling women it's your fault because you took Tylenol.
So I'm fascinated by the, I mean, look at the WHO, the World Health Organization, said, quote, large high-quality studies.
Right, and the large high-quality studies.
The same conclusion.
That those are mostly the sibling studies they're talking about.
Yeah, and the conclusion is that vaccines
unfortunately, nobody took to task what a terrible study this supposedly positive study was.
Yeah.
And it only came out 3 or 4 days later that one of the lead authors had been a plaintiff expert for plaintiffs who claimed autism
and made
was caused by Tylenol.
The
other thing is, let's get down to, we've talked about this before. Autism is predominantly a genetic disease.
And that's been proven by research.
That's correct. And the genetics, and remember, genetics is no longer like you were taught in high school, that the genetic code is somehow inviolate, you know, that only mutation can change it. In fact, we have a whole science of epigenetics now, which is that environmental forces, which include medications, toxins, other things, can change the reading of the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is that we know that the things that are highly associated with it are genetics, that is other siblings having, mm-hmm. you know, autism mm-hmm. or expressing autism. Advanced age. Now, initially it was only advanced age of the pregnancy of the woman.
Yeah, but
it turns out actually what's worse is the advantage of the man who was supplying the other half of the genome.
Really? So and when we say advanced age, we're talking what? 80, 90?
No, not 80 or 90. But, you know, it there's a fairly linear correlation, you know, that as with many genetic diseases,
sure.
as the you know, the genome contributors, the egg and the sperm, if we're allowed to say sperm on.
Yeah, FCC is not regulating. At least not that I know of. You're still allowed to say sperm.
Just
don't overdo it.
That stuff ages. And so you tend to see more genetic diseases occur as the parent and the, you know, both parents get older and older. Another thing, which of course they don't want to talk about very much, is air pollution.
Hmm.
Okay. In particular, particulate air pollution. And what gives us really a lot of particulate air pollution? Burning coal.
Coal, yeah.
Right?
Cars.
And particularly diesel.
Yeah.
Trucks.
Right. Hot air from politicians.
But this is the thing, is they want to look, and of course, then of course we had to have the usual aspersion about vaccines still being contributors. The last thing I'll say on this is that, in fact, the history of the vaccine causing autism scam was initially put forward by a British physician by the name of Wakefield, I think so, who subsequently lost his license to practice and also had to retract the Lancet article in which he made this claim. And just like this situation, Wakefield evidently was trying to get a patent on a competitor for what was the MMR vaccination at the time, you know, measles, mumps, rubella.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And that was the first vaccine that was attacked as causing autism. And the thought was that he actually wrote this article, which was totally fabricated. It was like dry labbed. You know, he didn't do any research. He just made it up. And he was doing it to basically be able to advance his financial interests in this other vaccine.
Well, that's the first time that would ever have happened, that somebody lied in order to make
This is just the same. It's the same as this article that they sort of alluded to. But again, my question was, why were any of those people standing up there?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. I think the initial fallout from this, and it's going to continue, I think, is just another example of Trump's coalition fraying. I mean, look at them. Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican from Louisiana. He's also a doctor.
Yeah, another profile in Courage who went along with voting for RFK Jr.
He's saying that the Health and Human Services should release the new data that it has to support this claim.
You know, it's out there. There isn't any new data. Article.
Then
it's
he goes on to say, you know, you're going to change a medical guideline without science. I mean, he's pushing back directly against Trump and RFK. And I love what he says after that. I mean, you're going to build a bridge without physics? You're going to fly a plane without engineering?
Well, they also brought up the issue of leucovorin.
Who?
Leucovorin, which, you know, has been looked at. It's a drug that enhances folate incorporation into the DNA. Folate being present to avoid errors of transcription. And it's used as an adjunct with certain chemotherapies. And so the studies that it has any effect on reversing autism once it's established are extraordinarily small.
Yeah. So worse than Trump's speech on autism and Tylenol, his speech at the UN. I mean, he called, there's so many things wrong with it, but he called climate change a hoax and the largest con job ever perpetrated on the planet. He also said that countries are going to hell.
He did say, if you use the term climate change, it could be getting hotter or it could be getting colder.
Well, that's fair enough.
That's all right.
Well, then he was on to bash the notion that years ago, decades ago, people were claiming that global cooling was going to happen. He says some bizarre stuff about the Dust Bowl he also says, quote, we're proudly exporting energy all over the world. We're now the largest exporter. And he's taking credit for that. But of course, the real person that deserves credit for making the U.S. the largest exporter is Obama, which just will forever, in my mind, discredit him as a leader that I really regret trusting Obama. But to his point, I mean, I think he's trying to set it up so that he's going to sell coal to countries that are going to go to hell otherwise, because they're relying on these phony types of energy systems, windmills, which are ugly. It's an incredible speech that I can't see.
Well, first of all, a lot of the speech was having to suffer through his stump speech. We had to hear again, the United States is the hottest country in the world, whatever that means.
Yeah, that's a reference to climate change.
You know, and the fact that he should have gotten the Nobel Prize 7 or 8 times because he stopped 7 wars already, most of which are, by the way, these conflicts are still ongoing.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do. He was supposed to talk for 15 minutes on things that would relate to the UN. And for the most part, other than taking to task the consensus that climate change needs to be addressed. Because the other question is, what's the loss to an economy if you were to address climate change? There's a lot of money to be made in that. Yeah. There's a lot of jobs that could be made from that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just that he's wedded to a 19th century technology, and he's been bought and paid for by the oil and gas industry.
Part of it is the money from the oil and gas industry.
Right.
Who even, interestingly, recently also pushed back against him, his criticism of wind turbines off the coast. Yeah, I saw that in passing just before we...
Well, because some of them have begun to diversify into other areas. There's Warren a Buffett, project off of like Rhode Island, you know, that is 80% finished.
And he stopped.
Right, and now the states there, Connecticut and Rhode Island and Massachusetts, may end up paying to finish it. And that was like 1,500 jobs.
Yeah.
And that's ongoing jobs.
Yeah.
You know, there are more people working in solar and wind energy now than work in oil and gas.
I like what Bill McKibben had to say about Trump's speech at the UN, and I'll quote it. He says, quote, attendees at the UN gathering didn't seem exactly angry, as you might have expected, given the cruel and insulting attacks. Some of them seemed almost embarrassed for Americans, almost sympathetic for the plight of a people ruled by a verbally incontinent and mentally limited codger, reduced to repeating the same silliness over and over. It is profoundly embarrassing to have people embarrassed for you. That's a really strong... I mean, McKibben doesn't usually, you know, name call, and that's borderline name... Well, it's beyond borderline name calling.
That's name calling, yeah.
It's name calling, yeah. but it's... He and many people are so offended by the speech that I don't see this helping Trump. I see this again one more reason why his power is going to begin to fray. You know, you can't bully the whole world. And you know, how does that does that, I mean, there the bottom line, most people probably aren't paying attention to that speech. More are probably paying attention to what's going on with the Jeff Epstein files or with his speech on autism. You know, this is probably going to get less pushback, but it's still one more reason why his power is beginning to fray.
Well, I think the thing that comes up for me is that he's now intercalating the same terms over and over in a dissonant fashion into his presentation. So I was struck, for instance, with the Tylenol conference, in which he said, women are going to have to fight like hell not to take Tylenol. You know.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a weird terminology. But it's as though, especially when he's speaking off the teleprompter,
mm-hmm.
you know, because evidently he's having a problem with the teleprompter.
And
the escalator. And he's being sabotaged by the UN, even though in both cases the teleprompter was run by...
His videographer,
from the White House,
right.
And the videographer on his way up the escalator hit the stop button on the escalator, leaving him at the bottom and really annoying the first lady.
Well, no, she
looked livid.
She took charge, though, and she walked up the steps.
So, yeah, because she could still breathe at the top. but it's just rote now. And eventually it's like people listening to him saying, what is he talking about? You know, because of course the fight like hell is after the assassination attempt.
Right.
In Pennsylvania. Yeah. You know, and what it's just, if people aren't worried about the fact that it seems to me that his limitations mentally are becoming more and more obvious as in terms of his language, you know, and that in that position, that kind of limitation of expansive thought is pretty dangerous.
Well, we'll see where that goes. We'll have more opportunities, I'm sure, because he will not stop talking, that's for sure. And again,
no, we'll hear
president.
Again about the Nobel Prize and how hot our country is.
Hey, I got to run to a break. When we come back, Charles, I want to tell you why I'm backing away from calling Trump a fascist, and we got plenty more to talk about beyond that. I think you might disagree with me on my reasoning. We'll see. Ed Fallon and Charles Golden with you folks, back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrum's primary concern. Dr. Westrum and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrum Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Back to the Valen Forum, and thanks to our partners, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so I have called Trump a fascist, and certainly
the... Can you explain to me what you consider a fascist?
Okay, and that's this question that that a hardcore Republican critic of mine asked me last week as well. Mm-hmm. To me, it's... It's when corporate and government power are combined under an authoritarian who limits or eliminates free speech, freedom of movement, and at the same time demonizes a class or multiple classes of people. And I understand historically the word came from Italy during Mussolini's reign. And
well, there's a reason, because fascism is a term that's derived from Latin, and the traditional symbol of the Roman Empire power, which was sticks in a bundle with an axe sort of at its... the apex. But anyway, that's the word fascist.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, and I don't, you know, I think when you look at President Trump, he certainly exhibits some of the traits that you see in fascist rulers throughout history. But I think that my problem is, as I ponder this more, it's a label. It may not be name calling. It's a label that, unfortunately, for whatever reason, It's disturbing to a lot of people. It feels like name calling, even if it's a legitimate descriptor. And so I think it's important, in my opinion, for me at least, to back away from that term. And you know, really the concern is that we are sliding into authoritarianism, and we are sliding in that direction very quickly under President Trump. But you know, some of the seeds of authoritarianism were sown before through Citizens United. Through the Patriot Act, which was reauthorized under Democratic presidents, you know, through the consolidation that's occurred in the media, which again was enabled by Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan. So a lot of the things that are leading us into an authoritarian, government where we don't see it, you know, a functional democracy anymore, are things that go way back. And even you could even point to the Electoral College, the U.S. Senate, the filibuster, gerrymandering. All these things are contributing to this authoritarian buildup, which right now is on steroids. But I think it's reasonable to say that, you know, there's really no one person to blame for where we're at. But right now, Trump is again moving it in that direction on steroids. And I don't think it helps to label him or anyone else fascist. I think it's more helpful to say, okay, authoritarianism is a threat. Here's what's happening to make it a threat. Here's how our Constitution is being undermined. Let's have that conversation instead of, you know, coming up with labels that are unhelpful.
I mean, I agree with you for the most part. I think
that's disappointing.
Yeah, I because it's been pretty well shown that when you start falling back on these labels, and I want to say I don't really care that the Karens on the right don't like being called fascist. You know, like evidently the other day, Newsom, you know, just called Stephen Miller, the deputy chief of staff, and the, you know, mastermind of our immigration policy.
Who knows what else?
Yeah.
Right, right.
He called him a fascist in on X. I think it was on X. And Miller shot back, "Why are you calling me a fascist?" And Newsom said, "Because you are." You know.
Well, that's just name calling that you would expect from a couple 8 or 9 year olds.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think if you think about it as a parent, you know, one of the things to disciplining a child is that generalizing from one behavior by falling back on a general term is of no point. Because it doesn't, you don't make any, the mind doesn't make any connection. You know, if you say somebody's a fascist, then the question is, well, what are you talking about? And I agree with you that instead of labeling, we know that the labels don't work, right? Authoritarianism doesn't work. Too many Americans don't even understand what that word means. You know, when you go to focus groups and you say, you know, some of the terms that kind of come up, right? Like authoritarianism, people have no idea what you're talking about. Really, no idea.
So you're saying I should go a step further, not even use that term.
I'm saying you should, these are the actions. You should be concentrating on what is happening, right? You should be concentrating on saying to the farmers, not that he's a fascist, not that, you know, that he's an authoritarian, not that having this failed businessman making economic policy makes no sense. Say to them, in Trump 1, he did this to you already. And now in Trump 2, you're surprised that you can't find a place to sell your soybeans anymore?
They got the bailout, so they forgot.
Well, or whatever.
Well,
to me, the critique needs to be very focused.
Yeah. And I want to talk more about the farmers and the impact that that his policy is having on soybeans in particular, but let me wrap up the authoritarian conversation with a quote from Robert Reich. And of course, Robert Reich was the economic czar under Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I've had him on the show before, and I did ask him.
Well, at least he wasn't the immigration czar.
Yeah, I did ask him. So you must, was it ever uncomfortable in those meetings, in those cabinet meetings with the president? He goes, yeah. He admitted he was a little bit of a fish out of water there.
Yeah.
But what he said, I really like what he had to say in a recent blog. He said, quote, Trump is not the cause of the growing cynicism about democracy and the deepening polarization of our society. He's the consequence and culmination of decades of neglect. We could not have remained on the road we were on toward ever-widening income inequality and ever-grading political corruption. If there's a silver lining to this darkening cloud, it is that Trump may finally force us to confront this long-term crisis. I think that nails it. You?
Yeah. I mean, I think you can, you know, certainly easily take this back to Newt Gingrich.
You know, or earlier.
Even earlier.
Yeah,
earlier than that. Sure. But, you know, yes. And that's the other thing that the Democrats should be doing. You know, which is get out there and make clear what the people around Trump are saying. Make clear what these oligarchs, another word that has no meaning to most Americans, but the tech bros, let them hear what these people really think of you, that they really think you're just here to be a serf, you know, and that we need to depopulate the earth. This is the philosophers of the tech bros, yeah. Right? And that even to the point of in a situation where we always talk about these horrible shootings and everything else, and we talk about the guns. But you know something? You know what's really the thing that's the common factor in almost all of these? It's social media. It's that these were people who were involved, sometimes in 4chan, sometimes in 8chan, but sometimes just in X and Facebook too. Mm-hmm. There's ideas out there that are driving this violence. And I agree with you and what Robert Reich said. Income inequality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's too many classes or too many people in this country who are there just to protect what they already have.
Yeah.
And that represents only 10% of the country. 90% of this country, doesn't have the wealth.
The 400 richest billionaires in the U.S. made $6.6 trillion in 2024, and that was up $1 trillion from 2023. So, yeah, the problem is extreme,
and it's getting worse. Make an ad shows that and says, you know, this is what they made. Why do they need a tax break?
And maybe the soybean farmers, which, again, in Iowa means soybean slash corn. I mean, you aren't just a soybean farmer in Iowa. You grow a two crop basically it's two.
Either way, it's oligo agriculture. It's not that great for the soil to grow two crops.
But we've had, you know, China has been the Iowa soybean farmers' biggest buyer, and now they're going to go to Argentina apparently, and the amount of soybeans being sold to China this year are practically none, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And yet,
it's zero. They've bought nothing all year.
Zero, yeah. And so they're buying from Argentina. And again, Trump's big bailout, the $20 billion bailout of his buddy Javier Milei. How do you say it, Milei?
I think so.
Something like that. That's,
he's a chainsaw guy.
Yeah, right.
He gave the chainsaw.
Right. Trump loves other authoritarian rulers, and this guy he likes him, so he's going to help bail out his failed economy.
Well, his relationship is also through Bessent, the Treasury Secretary.
Sure.
The irony is that Milei is a free trader. He does not.
But it'll
he's
take
not
20
a tariff
billion,
person.
But it'll take 20 billion.
Well, because I think there are legislative elections down there, and he needs to hold power. And things, as they often are in Argentina, are not going particularly well.
Yeah. Well, don't cry for Argentina.
Yeah. Well, he's another one with the cryptocurrency. You know, the cryptocurrency.
Oh,
right.
So anyway, Charles Grassley, again, Republican senator from Iowa, says, quote, farmers are very upset about Argentina selling soybeans to China right after the USA bailout. Still zero USA soybeans sold to China. Meanwhile, China is still hitting US with 20% retaliatory tariff. So, this is the second U.S. senator we've talked about on this program today, a Republican U.S. senator who has pushed back, fairly strongly and bluntly against Trump policy. So, I don't know.
Trump policy.
Right. Well, then the one on autism, there were statements on autism.
Right. No, I understand that. But I don't think Grassley is a profile in courage right now.
No, he's not. He used to be, but he's not. And but this is a brief expression of courage on behalf of
what the solution is going to be. This time, the solution will require a bigger bailout taken from the tariff.
Right.
That's correct.
Well, anyway, there's also Trump and the Constitution, right?
what's that?
Well, his administration is basically ignoring court rulings. We have one here in Iowa now that he's just ignoring. The judge required that that Armando Garcia Picasso, who was arrested and without a criminal record, that he be released on bond, and ICE is refusing to cash the bond. So they're ignoring the court ruling.
What about what became quickly a national story, which was the situation with Superintendent Roberts, Dr. Roberts.
Our school superintendent.
Yeah. I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, there's a pretty big-sized protest outside the federal building.
Oh, yeah. He's been transferred from Council Bluffs to Sioux City, which may indicate that he's not in line for immediate deportation. We'll see.
Right, because they thought he was going to be, they wanted him near the immigration court in Omaha.
Yeah. Well, hey,
what is your take on support for him? I mean, to me,
I think in community wise, he has huge support.
He
here.
Does, and
huge
for his work. The question is, what do we do with the fact that he was actually in the country illegally and had no work authorization, and how they didn't figure that out?
I like what the school board is saying. There's not enough information yet to respond.
Right, because he put an I-9 in, so they sent to the feds. Mm-hmm. The inquiry. So how did that not?
I don't
get
know. I mean, again, does all I know is he's very much loved.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
anyway, hey, before we run out of time, Charles, we want to talk a little bit about the Arlington Cemetery.
Oh, this is among a number of things we talk about with the Defense Department.
Right.
As I told you, a couple things. Secretary Hegseth is also always keeping his eye on the things that are most important. one of his duties lately has been he wants to execute, I believe, the doctor who
killed, death penalty,
who was convicted of killing a number of soldiers down at Fort Hood. It's been quite a while.
That was years ago.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, that seems to be, you know, because that proves your macho is you're for the death penalty. And then in something that no one really seemed to be paying attention to, there were 20 members of the 7th Cavalry who were given Congressional Medals of Honor.
Buried at Arlington?
No. Well, we'll get to Arlington last. Who were part of the massacre, and it was a massacre.
The Wounded Knee.
Yeah, I mean, it's recognized as one.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear from many people about it wasn't a massacre and they were under fire. First of all, most of them were killed by their own soldiers when they fired. They had surrounded this group of Lakota and were disarming them. And then when there was a fight over one of the rifles that went off and was shot in the air, the troops who were outside the circle started firing, and the troops in the circle started firing, and 25 of them were killed.
By each other. Yeah.
Correct. And then there was a small number of Lakota who at that point had rifles. And the whole thing was military incompetence.
Mm.
The senior generals had told these commanders there was nothing going on. It was the ghost dance thing. You know. And Miles, who was the senior general in that territory, said, let it go. Give them what they're supposed to be getting from these agents, you know, from the Indian service agents. And of course they didn't. They were just stealing the money. And so finally, you know, there was a recommendation when they looked at this about 2-3 years ago under Biden's administration that these medals should be rescinded.
Okay.
Because it wasn't a heroic action.
Right.
It was actually just to hide the incompetence of the government at the time, which I think was Cleveland.
So anyway, I'd like to hear more of it. We're running out of time, but
well, the Arlington Cemetery thing goes to something that is erroneously called the Reconciliation Monument. So maybe next time we get together, we can go through that because it's pretty interesting. It also it's about what our present times are about, which is the lost cause. You know, which is that the South was engaged in the noble activity of states' rights, and it was never about slavery.
All right. That would be a longer conversation. Hey, got to run to a short break. Charles, thanks for joining me. When we come back, we're going to kick you out of that chair and put Kathy Burns in there.
Okay.
And she's going to talk about something that we all will feel great about. A city orchard. An orchard happening here in the city.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
All right. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
You going to send the rabbits there?
No. There'll be plenty of wild rabbits running around causing enough trouble. All right. Back in a minute, folks. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Well, hi, Kathy Burns. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we have some good news, I think.
We do.
Yeah.
On October 29th, between 10 and noon, a project that Ed and I submitted to the city starting in February of 2023.
Over 2 years ago, two and a half years.
has been approved, and it is happening. The project is an urban orchard, and this will be in Drake Park.
Yeah, and you know, it's It's a little frustrating to think that it takes 2.5 years to get permission to plant an orchard.
Well, we're not asking permission. We're asking the city to do it.
Right. Yeah. To get others on board to have it happen. But yeah,
yes.
It's exciting to see it moving forward. This is the site of an old orchard that is really not producing anymore. It was put in 20 plus years ago, and then kind of the maintenance fell off the radar
a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was nice. We have harvested fruit there. And every year it got a little more rickety and a little less fruit. And lots of other people were coming in and picking some of the fruit. Want to note that the staff from the City of Des Moines, along with Trees Forever, an organization that does a lot of good work, the Tiny Trees Program, et cetera, with the city, will plant, with the help of volunteers and Birds and Bees Urban Farm, 36 new fruit trees in Drake Park, adding to the trees that were able to be salvaged from the original urban orchard.
So this would be a bigger orchard than there ever has been there.
Yes, and it will all be just south of the playground area and available for public picking for personal use,
right.
Not for commercial
use. You can't
come
in and make it your jam business, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
So what kind of trees are we looking at?
Well, it's... It's been interesting to see that list develop. It turned out we were the ones who developed the list. And I did consult with two different orchardry experts, Randall Voss with the Iowa State University Extension Services. He's an orchardry expert there. And a master gardener named Carol Sipfley. They both provided really valuable input about varieties that do well in Iowa. All the trees will be semi-dwarf.
That's good, because you get a big, tall apple tree, and we pick apples from one of those.
At Ty and Savannah's
house.
Yeah,
and it's so, the apples are so far, but you can't even reach them with a big, long picker, you know?
Well, it's the semi-dwarf will give the trees, especially when they're young, a strong enough root base to withstand high winds and weather events like that, but not be too tall for picking. Mm. So... the other significance of the list is that it's a variety of types of fruit, but it's also a variety of ripening season.
Okay.
So from late summer to late fall, apples and, let's see, it's apples, apricots, cherries, Juneberries, we'll talk about that in a little bit, peaches, pears, and plums, those trees.
And some of those, I mean, Juneberries in particular, will be... you know, ready early.
I think that's the earliest one, and it's actually not going to be a tree. It's
right.
going to be groomed as a shrub. In fact, making a hedge along one corner of the lot.
And I'm guessing the cherries will be next, probably also in June.
Probably,
yeah. So it's just nice you've got something available throughout the growing season into probably October, huh?
Yeah, and also the varieties were chosen based on their best uses, whether they're for fresh eating, for pies or other baked goods, or for canning or other types of preservation. So we're hoping to get a variety of fruits for people to enjoy. And it is a part of a growing effort within the city to increase food security and availability of urban food, you know, across the city and in all the wards of the city for residents to use and make sure they know where their food is coming from.
Yeah, and the city has said that they're interested in doing additional orchards. And I hope they don't wait till this one's ready to harvest. That'll be 5 years. Hopefully it'll be something they're willing to jump on, you know, even next year and begin to look at other locations.
I am guessing that the interest in just the planting event, and by the way, you may volunteer to get involved with that planting event, again, October 29th between 10 and noon. There is a link on the events site, and I have posted that on our Birds and Bees Urban Farm site, so you can look at that. A link to sign up with Trees Forever. I believe that you'll need to be, verified as not holding them liable if you cut your toe off with a spade.
Yeah, I hate when that happens, although, you know, those toes can go on to be good fertilizer. So juneberries are interesting, too, because, you know, they tend to get really tall, too. But if you get on them early enough, you can make it into like a hedgerow.
A hedge.
That's much more easily to be harvested. So.
Well, we're super excited.
Well, thanks, Kathy, for joining me. And thanks, mm-hmm. Congrats on that to all who have been involved. Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks to my guest today, Yasser Abu-Daga. And to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry, and Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, and Climate March. Finally, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.